Yes.
This is the July Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and we're meeting on the second Wednesday because of the holiday. Thank you. Can we have a roll call?
Smith.
Here.
Sherwood.
Here.
McBride.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
Mintz.
Yes.
Oh, here.
Yes. She approves the motion to be present. All right. So there is an amendment to the agenda that the date on the printed agenda says June, not July. Other than that, are there any proposed changes to the agenda as it stands? None? Hearing none, we'll approve the agenda. Are there any? No, I'm asking that wrong. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the June meeting?
June 5th.
The June 5th meeting. If you remember, that's where we had all the windmills.
Yeah.
Okay.
So with corrections.
So are there any corrections to the minutes? I mean, to the minutes from the last meeting? Not the agenda.
Oh, the minutes.
That's the minutes. So we have a motion by PJ.
I'll second it.
By McBride. And we have a second by Mintz. Can we have a voice vote, please? All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay. The minutes stand. Now is the time for public comment. So if there's any matters that the public would like to bring to our attention or discuss that are not on the agenda, now is the time. Okay, seeing none, we will move forward. Let's go ahead and hear the public hearing presentation from the staff on CUP 0819 from Story County Conservation, Dakin's Lake.
So in the staff report is the CUP for 0819 for Dakin's Lake Cabin. Applicant is Story County Conservation. The property location is at Dakin's Lake, which is off 70613 130th Street in Section 16, Township 85, Range 21. The districts that are covered by here, Story County Ambulance is the ambulance service for the campground. Zering Fire Department is the fire department, and then Story County Sheriff is the police. So this is for a new conditional use permit from Story County Conservation. They want to begin construction of a cabin for the campground. This is one of three that was approved for their master plan back in 2013. It'll be sustainably built, ADA compliant. It will contain geothermal, solar, and other sustainable design elements, including stormwater management practices. A little bit of history. They're requesting this CUP to build the cabin at Dakin's Lake. Funding has now been approved or appropriated, and construction can begin pending approval of the CUP as presented. The proposed cabin is 1,330 square feet, three bedroom. One bedroom is ADA accessible. There's two bathrooms. One of those is also ADA compliant. The proposed location is the first spot in the campground to the southeast once you come into the main campground there at Dakin's Lake. The vicinity map and proposed cabin will be there at Dakin's Lake. It's about a quarter mile north of Zering, 11 miles north of Highway 30. It's in the Lincoln Township. This is roughly about what the footprint of the cabin is. There is a 63-foot rear setback, which is greater than the 50 required in the zoning district there. The cabin will also be outside of the floodplain. So here's some drawings that Jason did from AVEC. There's two landscaping pads here. Those are to be in compliance with the 20% impervious surfaces. The northern one also will hold, act as a buffer for the propane tank for the site. The second one, you can see where the second and third cabin eventually proposed would be along some of the paving for the ADA compliance. Just kind of more close-up of that, showing contours. Here's a floor plan. The top three are the bedrooms. This one is ADA compliant. This is the ADA compliant bathroom. Here's the other bathroom. This is a large, essentially living room, and then a kitchenette is right there. Elevations of the proposed cabin. So following here is just some site photos. Went out to the site, took photos facing in each direction. Facing east, southeast towards the lake, south of the lake, and then west across the loop drive that goes through the campground. So for standards of approval, compatibility, there's already a established campground in this location. The cabin fits in with the nature of that. All setbacks will be met. And again, this is the first of three proposed cabins for the lake. The closest property line for the cabin is that east property line, 63 feet. The rest of the property lines are all excess of 275 feet, so there's not an issue of it encroaching on any other property. The property to the east is also owned by Story County Conservation, and there are mature trees that buffer that area as well. So as far as traffic goes, we had asked for information based on how many vehicles this would possibly generate. In the staff report, it's broken out a little bit more, but based on their projections, it averaged out to be 1.5 trips per day, averaged over the course of the year. And if you have any questions on that, we can go over how they got to that number. So parking and loading, the cabin currently has 7 parking stalls, which is fine. Once the additional cabins are put in, they will cross that threshold of having 10 or more parking spaces. So there will need to be trees planted, 1 for every 5 parking spaces in the future. One of those parking spaces will be ADA compliant. It'll be signed and have appropriate lighting. Kind of going into lighting and signs, there's no proposed signs. However, there is exterior lighting that will be supplied, especially due to ADA compliance. All of the lighting will meet the ADA as well as our own standards in 88.09 and 90.04. There will be no light trespassing to adjacent properties or anything like that. The environmental impact for the site is anticipated to be very limited. Construction of the landscape areas will be utilized to account, again, for that 20% impervious surface requirement. They plan to use stormwater mitigation practices through the collection of rainwater into rain collection barrels. Those are shown in those elevation drawings, as well as those landscaping pads to help mitigate that water. So based on the analysis, the board concludes that all the above development criteria we met must be recommended approval of the application unless it conclude that one of these will probability of the development will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working adjoining surrounding property, impair an adequate supply, including quality of light and air to surrounding properties, unduly increase congestion in the roads with hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers, diminish or impair established property values or adjoining or surrounding property, not be in accord with the intent, purpose, or spirit of the land development regulations or the C2C plan. Here's just a brief overview of the questions that were asked of Story County Conservation. They did meet and provide responses for each one of these, which is also in the staff report. Public notices were sent to property owners within a quarter mile on July 1. At this time, we have not received any comments from the public. Geothermal wells that they will be using will require permits from Environmental Health. They understand that and agree that they will pull those permits prior to construction. And then staff is recommending, or planning development staff recommend approval of the conditional use permit application as put forth in case CUP 08-19. And here are the alternatives if commission would decide to.
Are there any questions to Marcus or staff about the proposal?
Planning staff again is recommending approval, which is
with no conditions, right?
The first item.
Got it. All right. Now is the time for, if there's no discussion from the commission, now is the time for public comment. So if there's any members of the public that would like to comment, now's the time. Okay, seeing none, is there any discussion on the commission related to this conditional use permit proposal? If there's no discussion, then I think we're ready to entertain a motion.
I move that we take this as it is.
I'll second it.
All right. So we have a motion for recommending the staff's proposal of approving CUP 0819 with no additional conditions. And a second, a motion by McBride and a second by Menz. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
McBride.
Yes.
Menz.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
All right. So the recommendation, this goes to the CUP, goes to the Board of Supervisors, or to go to Board of Adjustment?
Board of Adjustment.
All right. All right. Moving on. Moving on to the discussion for amending Chapter 85 and 88 of the Story County Land Development Regulations definitions and general site planning standards for stormwater management and erosion and sediment control.
Amelia's pulling this PowerPoint up. I just want to thank her for all the work that she's done this week. Been working on this.
We've seen this a few times, so yeah.
Yeah.
I want to thank the Planning and Zoning Commission for the input that you provided. We received input from a lot of different people, a lot of different groups, architects, engineers, builders, developers, environmental groups, a lot of interested people. We most recently received some really good feedback from a focus group. It's probably been about a month ago, which really kind of helped fine-tune that ordinance. And so we're really happy to have this form before you, and with that, I'll turn it over.
Yeah, thanks so much. I actually just ran out to go take another comment even before the meeting from another person that reviewed this. So, all right. You've seen this a couple times, I think once in, 2018, and then once in February of this year, now again. If I'm forgetting another time, I apologize. So we began this process due to a couple issues with grading work. It didn't require a permit, wasn't under the state's jurisdiction. Other development cases where we've seen just kind of a mixed bag based on the current ordinance with some folks submitting plans that involve stormwater controls, where some folks don't. The ordinance currently just states that you should use best management practices. So that's kind of open to interpretation.
Yeah, I think we've also seen this as a result of prior approved developments that then didn't meet live up to the promise, and mm-hmm. when they wanted to expand, right? We had
yep.
that discussion. So.
And then we also had the watershed assessment, which I know you guys are familiar with, that reviewed our current stormwater and erosion control ordinance and provided a set of recommendations to us as well. So based on those recommendations, model ordinances from Johnson County, Dubuque County, City of Ames, a nonprofit called the Iowa Stormwater Education Partnership, the NPDES, National Pollutant Discharge Elimination Systems permits, and the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual, just to name a few, we've come up with what's before you this evening. In February, you asked us, after hearing the ordinance, to do some more public outreach, which we've done. I'll talk about that this evening. And then you also wanted more information on costs, so I have those. They were in a memo as well. So I guess after that February meeting, we took the ordinance back to the interagency review team and really worked to simplify it. There was a large section on credits for low-impact development that we cut. There were also some things in the erosion and sediment control requirements that have been cut that wouldn't have been easy for a property owner to complete themselves. And that was based on the feedback of the county engineer, conservation, health, and environmental health director. And then we had a focus group. So the watershed assessment work group, which is working on implementing our watershed assessment recommendations, recommended that we have a moderated focus group and invite stakeholders, community members, to review the ordinance and have a discussion. And what a great suggestion that was.
We have a few of the folks here today.
Yep, we do. And so we posted on social media, we sent out an email invitation to some stakeholders in the area. I've provided you with a list of who got an actual email invitation. It's at the back of the ordinances printed off for you to look at. We also had County Conservation Director, Planning and Development Staff, Supervisor Merkin attend it. And so the main themes of the meeting were support for the proposed amendments with some minor changes. So we've really added some definitions and also had many more references to the manuals which designers should use. That was actually a comment from Jim Sweeney, who's in the audience tonight. So thank you, Jim. Reduced the threshold from 5 acres for managing for overbanking and extreme flooding to 1 acre to match what other counties are doing and other communities a little bit better for stormwater management. One other recommendation that was in the post-it ordinance that has since changed again based on some more feedback we've actually received was folks had to design to something called a curve number of 58 to replicate pre-settlement conditions, so what Iowa historically looked like. And now we've changed that to allow engineers to select, based on the soil group of the site, what that site's curve number would be for a meadow. And so they can use the Webb Soil Survey through USDA and RCS for that. So it allows a little bit more flexibility because not all sites have, you know, the same soils and the same runoff potential. This focus group also had some really interesting ideas that were outside the scope of the current ordinance, but that I wanted to share with you all and then ultimately the Board of Supervisors. There was a lot of discussion about the role of drainage districts and how they should maybe, somebody used the word rebranding, to focus on water quality improvements as well. And provide incentives for voluntary practices. So while that's not a part of this ordinance, I think that's a conversation that we can have. It might not be our department, but at least bring up that, hey, this group had some more thoughts about expanding how we promote water quality in Story County. So with that, I've prepared a PowerPoint going through the proposed ordinance. I know you've seen this before, so I can go through it. I've also highlighted some of the changes, so I could go through just mainly the changes and do a broad summary as well. It's up to the commission.
Please do.
Would you like the summary or just line by line?
No, you don't need to read it to us.
Okay, great. Okay, perfect. So the first change you'll note, if you're on your construction site erosion and sediment control ordinance, let me pull mine up so we're all on the same page. Okay, so in a previous version, we had required folks to submit their paperwork related to their NPDES permit. We cut that. So now if you're over an acre, we just state you have to get an NPDES permit from the state. We're not requesting any paperwork be turned in and duplicated to us. We also, you know, reorganized this section a lot. And one thing we added was they should provide with their stormwater, I'm sorry, their erosion control plans, a party responsible for maintenance. So we have a contact in case there are issues. So it's still, though, that folks under 1 acre who don't need an NPDES permit would be the ones submitting erosion control plans with their permit applications. And not an engineer. And then we have general requirements. So these are requirements that would apply to everyone. So you should install erosion and sediment control best management practices following standards from state SUDIS manual, which is an urban design specifications manual. Maintain them to keep them in working order. You should generally just minimize the area you're going to disturb on your site. So whether that's by using staging, so not doing your construction all at once, not doing a mass grading of your site, or marking the limits of disturbance so nobody puts a stockpile of topsoil where your septic system's supposed to go. It's all marked out so people don't go outside the limits. Or just retaining plant cover as able. And you should also stabilize your disturbed area within 14 days using temporary stabilization practices. So mulching, compost blankets, and that 14 days is based on NPDES permits. Again, that was recommended to match state requirements, as that's what designers are familiar with. We also added definitions of what final stabilization is based on state requirements. That was Jim's suggestion. So to give people an idea of what is expected, not just have a term final stabilization and have folks not know what that means. And then temporary stabilization also has a definition. For sites with sensitive features, there are other requirements. These include having a buffer zone for development. These buffers are for different environmental features, and they're based on what was recommended in the watershed study for buffer areas. I think before you guys had a question about what an environmentally sensitive area is, so we added a definition. The definition references the restoration and protection maps available on the Story County website under watershed planning, and we can update that if they move locations. But now folks know exactly what to look for. And then it was also suggested by the focus group that we encourage revegetation where an existing native vegetation does not exist in these buffer zones. So that's not a requirement, but it's an important statement, just to get folks thinking about that. Perimeter sediment control, this is the same. So if you're near a sensitive area, so upslope of a water course or environmentally sensitive area, or may impact neighboring properties, have sediment go onto neighboring properties, perimeter controls should be used. Requirements for treatment of topsoil, those are the same. So practices to reduce compaction. And very similar to state requirements, requiring topsoil to be respread and restored where possible on a site. And then we specifically reference soil quality management and restoration practices for folks to follow in doing that restoration. So that may be adding a little bit of compost to ensure you have 8 inches of topsoil on a site. Construction site standards, those are the same. Stabilize construction entrance and having appropriate concrete waste management. We have the inspections and responsibilities section still. The focus group recommend it. Having provisions in for allowing the county access for inspections, which we've added. So that would be on
page six.
Yep, thank you. And then also a provision for violations. And so that provision actually just references the existing violations chapter in the Story County Code of Ordinances. But it also allows us to have a set procedure. So if we do get a complaint, there is a violation. The ordinance says we're following our already accepted procedures.
Right, there's an enforcement means.
Yep. And then the same exemptions for agriculture. And then the county engineer does not need to submit a grading permit application. If there are no questions on erosion control, we could move into stormwater, or I can take questions at the end.
Let's do that now. Are there any questions about what Amelia's just covered related to the erosion?
Okay.
All right, let's move into stormwater.
Okay. The main change, again, is that prior we had a 5-acre threshold for folks needing to do overbank and extreme flood protection stormwater management. We've reduced that to 1 acre to match. So everybody that disturbs an area over 1 acre has to do all of these unified sizing criteria, which is pretty typical for Iowa.
And to clarify, that's not, I own a 1 acre or 5 acre lot and I'm going to be doing some work. That's the actual
disturbed area. So
okay.
If you grade 1 acre
okay.
for a purpose that's not agriculture.
Okay.
Yeah. We've also put in a provision that states low impact development practices should be used where possible to meet stormwater management criteria and in the design of the development. And so what that means is, using the soil quality restoration, for instance, that was discussed in erosion control to provide some infiltration of that stormwater runoff to meet the criteria that a site is designed to manage a water quality volume of 1.25 inches. So encouraging folks to use natural drainage patterns, open conveyance versus pipes to provide additional infiltration. And also considering in the design of their development where natural resources, environmentally sensitive areas are located, and just being mindful in the design of the development. Maybe designing around them using clustering, that kind of thing. But it's at this point just a statement that's encouraging that kind of practice, not requiring it. And then we have the unified sizing criteria, which again address managing the quality of volume, water quality volume of a site. So that's managing a rainfall depth of 1.25 inches, which is 90% of the storms in Iowa, to provide infiltration and also filtering out some of the sediment or other pollutants that may be leaving a site from a first flush rain event. To protect stream channels, we have a criteria to provide 24 hours extended detention of the volume from the one-year 24-hour storm, which is kind of a flashier event, could cause some stream bank erosion typically. And then we do have a rate control as well, so that that's for extreme and overbank flooding events. Peak discharge rates from storms from the 5 to 100 year shall not be greater than pre-settlement discharge rates.
So a week ago we had a storm where we got like 2 inches of rain in an afternoon. Is that, I'm just wondering, I don't know what that 24-hour, 1 year versus 5 year, 100 year, yeah.
I included a hydrograph in the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
So the tall line is the flow rate over time. Underneath is the amount of runoff. The tallest one is post-development runoff hydrograph with no flow control. So there's no control here. This one that might, I'm trying to hold the PowerPoint thing still.
That's fine.
Yes. is pre-development hydrograph. So you can see it's released over a longer period of time. The flow rate is much lower, right? The peak discharge rate of volume off of that site. And then the other hydrograph you see, so the third line there, that pretty much mimics pre-development, is kind of the goal of this ordinance. So while there might be more runoff total under that curve, it's retained to...
it's over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We got 4.5 inches that time.
Wow. It's a lot of rain.
That was a lot of rain.
Yeah, it was.
And then these plans, the stormwater management plans, should be prepared by a licensed professional engineer, unlike erosion control. So again, we're having an engineer design these. The main other change, again, was allowing engineers to use the soil survey available online to determine a site's hydrologic soil group in picking the curve number that they'll use to determine what pre-settlement condition looks like, so giving them a little bit more flexibility there. But they do still have to design to a meadow cover. And then there's a similar inspections and responsibilities and exemptions section as in the erosion and sediment control with a few differences. The main difference is that there's a provision for allowing maintenance of legally established development. So that could be a parking lot that was done when this ordinance wasn't completed before. But just doing maintenance of that parking lot, not expanding the area, wouldn't trigger the stormwater requirements. I think we've heard a lot from other communities about how that can be really costly if you've already developed a site with a parking lot and then redoing the parking lot. You have to put, you know, some kind of controls underneath the parking lot, that kind of thing. We certainly don't want to not encourage folks to improve their properties.
Especially if there's site constraints.
Mm-hmm.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. And then we also incorporated a waiver for doing overbank and extreme flooding. That is if you complete an assessment that shows there will be no increase in the total peak discharge from the developed site, or if the structural, the BMPs, the best management practice you've chosen, actually increase the peak flows. Sometimes that can happen. So we want to make this is from the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual, this provision. Yeah.
Is there any, so without making the requirement that if you're going to make any modification or improvement to your property, you're not going to trigger full enforcement, right? But is there any threshold where...
Yeah, so if you start adding on and reach the 1 acre disturbed threshold, whether that's at one point in time or cumulatively...
Okay. I'm just wondering if...
If it's part of a common development plan.
Let's use the example of the parking lot, right? You're going to make some repairs or do some improvements mm-hmm. to your parking lot. If you're not going to expand it,
mm-hmm.
but let's say, you know, oh, the parking lot is, you know, 50 years old and it's time to actually replace it,
mm-hmm.
and they're literally going to tear it, completely tear it up and redo it.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not expanding, that's not going to trigger
right.
any improvements, but wouldn't that also be... I guess my question is there a reasonable way to say if you're going to refurbish or disturb X percent of an existing
mm-hmm.
structure, right, or
yeah,
impervious
I think,
area?
For instance, our nonconforming use chapter uses the 60% value.
Okay.
Provision. So if you destroy a structure past 60% of its assessed value, you cannot reconstruct it without meeting our current requirements.
Okay. So there is a trigger for...
That's not in this ordinance. That's just an example of what you're talking about.
All right. What you might be thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I totally agree with the... Whatever it is, right? I own a barn, been constructed for, you know, 100 years. It's falling in. I'm going to rebuild it. You're not going to fix it. You're going to tear it down. And that's maybe a bad example, but
mm-hmm.
it would seem to me that you don't want to discourage disruption, I mean, improvement,
mm-hmm.
if it's marginal or partial, but if it does go beyond some excessive percent, I was just asking, that's more,
sure. mm-hmm.
that's more of a, I think, a discussion item for us. I was just asking if that was,
yeah.
since we're not going through this line by line, I just wanted to make sure if that was.
More than one source through our process of putting it out there for review. So as long as you're not changing that footprint to a paved surface or a building footprint,
no, just
then we didn't want them to have that count against them. And then we thought we'd start fresh with any proposed improvements from them.
Mm-hmm.
If it got to that point, especially.
Okay. All right, keep going.
Okay. So you also asked for some more information on costs
mm-hmm.
last meeting. Yeah, we reached out to several area engineering firms and folks that participated in the focus group. Cost is a really variable thing based on a site and a project. But we've tried really hard to put something together. Just know that it's very variable. One firm noted that, you know, there's fees for the calculations and the design. There's fees based on the land not used as part of the development, the land dedicated to a stormwater practice. In researching this, there's also fees ongoing for maintenance to keep these practices in working order even after the design. But we also wanted to note that there are also costs that we don't always internalize associated with downstream water quality impacts and flooding impacts. And currently, you know, with the vagueness in the stormwater ordinance, some folks are implementing best management practices where others aren't. And so there's a cost in that the playing field isn't always level. But I'm going to talk about the cost of land a little bit. The person that oversees the stormwater management plan review for Dubuque County suggested that you could maybe think about the cost of land that goes into these stormwater practices as equivalent to the profits lost when this area is used for a stormwater management practice instead of for a development lot. you know, we kind of looked around Story County at folks that have put in stormwater practices and lot prices. But what we also noted is that in all subdivisions over 10 development lots already, you're required to reserve 15% of your subdivision's area as open space, and that open space could be a stormwater practice. So developers are already required to reserve common open space as part of their development. And so the impact of having them put a stormwater management practice in on the cost of land may not be as severe as if we didn't already have a common open space requirement. Regarding construction costs, so again, this varies based on the size of the practice, a development, other site factors. There was a study in 1999 that the EPA completed. They recommended adjusting for regional rainfall factors, and we also adjusted for inflation with these numbers. And these costs that you're seeing on the screen, so they're by a type of site. So the first one would be a retention basin for a residential site of 50 acres, but there are some 5-acre commercial sites and 5-acre residential sites as well for other practices. These do not include engineering design costs. The EPA study noted that this could be 25 to 32% of the construction costs, typically. You know, when we're looking at the overall costs and how much it will add per lot to, like, you know, a 50-acre residential site, I didn't bring my calculator. But, you know, 100,000 divided by, you know, 40 lots, but you'd have to add on, you know, the design costs and then also the costs of maintenance.
It's 2,500. That's fine.
Oh, thank you. So
I've got three with me.
So the cost of maintenance can also be thought of as a percentage of the construction costs. This chart's from a Minnesota Pollution Control Agency study from 2005. So annual maintenance costs may be, oh, it looks like 3 to 10% of the construction costs. What we do require that they have submit a maintenance plan, and so part of that maintenance plan could be that, you know, everyone's homeowners association fees in part cover the annual maintenance costs. I also just wanted to talk about one other thing related to costs of construction. And when you're constructing like a practice such as a detention basin, you know, it's one thing to be constructing that practice as part of the initial grading of a site, right? But it's another cost completely. It's really heightened if you're doing a redevelopment of a site and then adding it in, you know, when a site's already been developed. So again, that's where the maintenance exception comes in for sites, you know, the redevelopment of a parking lot where you're not triggering that stormwater ordinance, because that would really add a lot of costs if there's a site with a lot of constraints and then because they're maintaining something previously developed, have to put in a practice after the fact. We also looked at the cost of erosion and sediment controls. Jim actually provided these from CGA. I provided the whole Excel spreadsheet that he submitted on the Agenda Center for you all to look at. So I also reached out again to Dubuque County. They estimated that soil quality restoration for a lot in a subdivision could be $2,000 to $3,000 per lot. We did receive a site plan, I think it was last year, from someone that typically builds houses in another county, and so included some erosion control and sediment practices on the site. And so based on that site plan, I tried to put together an estimate of what the erosion and sediment control ordinance might cost. This particular site plan only graded about half the site. They had 671 linear feet approximately of silt fence on the site. They had a construction entrance to prevent, you know, tracking of sediment off the site. With the materials costs of all that, we approximated it might be $12,000. That includes the soil quality restoration as well. The majority of that is the stabilized construction entrance. So that's, you know, putting down gabion stone. I think there's a high cost to the stone. As you can see on this chart, stabilized construction entrance, it's $50 a ton estimated, or $47 a square yard. Jerry and I were discussing this this afternoon and had some thoughts. You know, a lot of the times these construction entrances get made into the driveways for dwellings, or a contractor could potentially reuse the stone. If they scooped it up, it'd be between the contractor and the homeowner. And so that is the costs. Any questions there? And then I'll go into the recommendation or stormwater questions. I skipped over that. Okay. So we're recommending that you all take action to support the proposed amendments this evening and have us place the item on the July 23rd, 2019 Board of Supervisors agenda for first consideration. Just in summary, again, we believe this is a necessary update to our ordinance. We've modeled this over other Iowa cities and model ordinances, and we've really worked with stakeholders to workshop the ordinance as well,
and counties.
and again, we've really recently learned from our watershed assessment about water quality improvements needed in Story County, and this is an important step in implementing the recommendations of that assessment. So with that, I'll take any more questions or can have a public hearing.
Thank you. Commission, have any questions for Amelia or staff?
Thank you for all your hard work.
Well, we'll see in a minute. We'll see how the payoff is.
Well, they put a lot of work. I wish that I had gone to school for this other than early childhood, but that's fine. Because I might have some questions, but this is a lot to take in.
It is.
For somebody walking in off the street, this is a lot to take in.
Okay.
And these guys, some of these guys have a lot more experience than I do. But thank you again for all your work.
All right, now is the time for public comment. If there's anybody that would like to comment on this proposal, step to the podium and give us your name and address.
Scott Rowe, Fox and Erie, 414 South 17th Street, Ames. I need to apologize. I'd like to have been involved in this a little bit more as we went through these focus groups, but I had a health issue that kept me out of work for 2 months and busy trying to keep my head above water. So I think we made some progress here, but there's some things that I'd like to talk about. I'm going to kind of go in reverse, but maybe that's freshest in memory, is redevelopment sites are really difficult cost numbers. You get in the range of $50,000 to $100,000 per acre on rehab sites, so it gets really expensive when you're rehabbing. If I had my brother, I would just say you exempt that unless you have some downstream issue you have to deal with, because those are tremendously expensive, and plus, generally our options are pretty limited of what we can do, and so we end up doing bizarre systems, expensive systems that don't work very well. So I would just ask you to consider taking redevelopment sites out. I don't see this as a huge problem in the county for the most part. It might be worthy of asking, you know, what kind of problems, you know, have this downstream look, which I think is a good thing, and make sure that you don't have some issues there that need to be addressed. In other words, neighbors already got a problem, and, you know, redevelopments can make it worse. So, but trying to do quality in particular, because there's two parts of the stormwater ordinance. There's quality and then there's the quantity, right? You're trying to limit the flow, and you're also trying to improve the water quality. The quality part in particular can be the most really expensive. It's hard to get that done, especially on a redevelopment site. On new sites, I don't know that it's necessarily an issue. In fact, most of the time we incorporate these things as amenities and the site, you know, extra green space behind your house, you know, common space that you can use. So 15% generally is not much of a problem. So we don't normally look at cost per se on a new development as being anything. We don't discount that or do it. It's just part of how the development works. The 15% since that's already exists kind of dictates quite a bit. And then the question would be is, do you have more than that? So that's kind of the highlights on the cost. Now I'm going to go back to the sediment control thing. You have some affinity questions or some comments on this, because there's a couple things added, and again, it's a way that sometimes they're written versus how they're actually controlled. One of my big problems is this buffer space thing, especially from streams. And there's different orders of streams, and we understand what those are, and that's used in Ames as well. But the problem is, my stream beds are usually the most disastrous place on the site. In other words, they're highly eroded, they need to be fixed, I need to go in there and work on them. And really what you do when you do this is the law of unintended consequences is that I don't touch those, and they should be fixed, because we've got eroding banks, we've got bad issues, and yet when we have this buffer on there, you're telling me to stay out of it. So we use that gets used as an excuse not to do what the right thing is, plus it really limits really a lot of times what I'd like to do to fix things. And so to me, as an enforcement, the way it's written, I understand the buffer concept, I understand what they're trying to propose, but really every stream that we're gonna be next to, almost without exception, is highly degraded and needs some effort put to it. So that buffer part ends up being an obstacle. The other part would be is this, you have a 1 acre minimum, which is a standard thing, and that's actually required by state code, but then you don't really define very well what's less than an acre. You say, well, when it's less than an acre, you have to do this, but there's really no minimum. So at what point, it kind of goes to the question of, if you're doing 5 square feet, do I need to have something? There needs to be some sort of minimum on the bottom where you don't have to do anything. Those vary a little bit all over the map. Ames is a half acre. So Ames has, you have to have an Ames permit at a half acre, and then 1 acre, you have to have a state permit. So there needs to be some bottom into that, otherwise you can have some issues there. That's in page one, I think 4B. Those are, I think, kind of my highlights for that. There is one other kind of unintended consequence that you kind of put into the erosion control. We do like to, and the county would like us to, I think, put prairie landscapes in. Those are really super slow to get restored. It's a real challenge to get those anywhere near where you want to be I usually use a 3 to 7 year period. And so saying that you have to have 70% coverage and all these other things is all fine and well, but it does mean in the prairie landscape that I'm gonna say, well, I'm not gonna use prairie landscape because I gotta make this coverage requirement. So I'm gonna go away from some things that maybe would be good things for the site that we won't do because of that. I also don't think you should exempt the county engineer from this. And the reason being is you'll listen to him probably better than you listen to me. And if he's having problems with an ordinance, then he should have to suffer like the rest of us, and then he can come back and tell you if the ordinance changed. There's always an element of these ordinances where you gotta see how it gets enforced before you see whether it's really an issue or not. And I think the county engineers, your canary in the coal mine, you should be able to, they have to do it just as well as anybody else. So that's just my opinion on that. The drainage districts are kind of another semi-quasi thing that are out there. They're semi-governmental and semi-private. I don't know, first of all, there's kind of two parts of that is, first of all, I don't really see how your ordinance covers those, and second of all is, even if it did, I'm not certain it'd be legal, because all the law for drainage districts was written in the late 1800s, and so some of that is law that, frankly, you can say whatever you want, but I can do it whatever I want. There is some provisions in the drainage district law that are rarely used that are good for this, is you are allowed to have sediment basins for drainage districts and have the drainage district pay for and manage those areas. It's something I, in my entire career, have never seen that done. There's been a few times where I think I'd like to do that, but haven't had anybody try to do that. Any questions on erosion control? Before I skip on here.
Nope.
so on the stormwater part, I've got kind of two main points here. First of all is I said this the last time I was here, is the counties are different than the cities. And some of the things that you're wanting and trying to do are not good when you're in the county. And one of those, really, these practices is this infiltration, trying to infiltrate everything into the ground. First of all, infiltration rates, for the most part, in this area are lousy, all right? So it's going to take a long time, and it's going to be a very small amount of water. So generally, in order to meet that requirement, we're holding water for a long period of time, and all we're doing is breeding mosquitoes, which is what we did drainage for originally, to get rid of mosquitoes. The second part of it is because of the way that works in the systems, is all we're going to do is going to make a bunch of septic systems fail, and we're going to make a bunch of houses have some issues with groundwater into their house. Maybe not on your property, but your downstream neighbor is going to have an issue, and you're going to have some issues with the septic tank, and you're going to have some issues with those houses. That is an unintended consequence of this requirement, and it happens in Ames as well. I have neighbors now that are spinning sump pumps that are running 24/7 because of somebody that upstream put in an infiltration system. That's something that Ames turns a blind eye to, but you know, it's going to be a problem. I think it's worse in the county because your treatment systems, septic systems, are intended to exfiltrate, and they need to have good drainage in order. And if we do some of these infiltration rates, it's going to be a bad thing for those things. So we're already anticipating some of those things when we're doing developments. We're using different septic systems, more expensive ones, in order to prevent this issue. But again, you can have neighbors downstream that are older or whatnot. So I particularly don't like that one. The second part is the overbank protection thing. That one should be just strict. All right, and I'll tell you why. It's because you're going to make flooding in Ames worse if you do that. It's really quite simple. Because there are general rules of doing detention, and if you detain in the bottom third of a drainage area, you're going to actually increase the flooding. If you're in the middle third, if you detain, sometimes it'll have a negative effect, but generally it's considered neutral. Most of the detention that you want to do if you're trying to prevent flooding in Ames is in the top third of the drainage basin. You're trying to get that peak flow knocked down. Given that Story County has basically Ames at kind of the base of the Skunk River and the Squaw Creek watershed, and most of the development is happening relatively close to Ames or Nevada, Indian Creek, is we're going to make some of those situations worse if you use the overbank protection criteria. I particularly do not like that one because I think it's a bit of a hocus-pocus number anyway. It came out of the stormwater manual. You have to understand where the stormwater management manual came from. It was copied from Maryland, of all places, and tried to be used here. It was ported over, and again, we're trying to get something that everybody can follow. Including my engineering brethren are not very good at their jobs, so that they can have a checklist to kind of follow. And so you have to have something, and I realize that. But the overbank protection is a mistake, especially in the context of where most of the development is going to happen. It's not going to do you any good. I don't think you're going to have a lot of unintended consequences from that long term if you do that. I've been doing this for a long time. I do expert witness work, so I get to see everybody's disasters and what went wrong. And this is one of those things that I see, you're going to start seeing more frequently. The other thing you're going to see more frequently, and I get calls on this quite frequently, is failure of BMPs to work. And some BMPs are, not all BMPs are created equal. There are some that will work no matter how much you maintain them or whether you care about them or not. There are others that I guarantee that'll fail within 3 years or the first ownership change where somebody says, I don't know why that thing is there, I'm going to fill it in, mow it, do whatever. All right. So not all BMPs are created equal. So from my standpoint, I tend to move towards ones that are kind of, for lack of a better term, trying to be fail-safe. In other words, one individual landowner can't screw it up, usually something regional and owned in common. In other words, you might have a detention pond that's the responsibility of the drainage or of the drainage basin that's in common, but you don't try to do some of these other PMPs. I guarantee all the vegetated ones will fail. It'll be 100% failure within 10 years. And I don't know, at that point, you're not going to come to the developer and say, you need to do this or whatnot. That's not going to happen. He's not going to be interested in doing that. So you're going to have to go out and enforce this on individual homeowners. I've seen Johnson County has adopted the unified criteria that talks about it here and used that in the county. And I saw their presentation on it, and I'm like, this is going to be close to 100% failure rate at the end of the day, because when I do conservation, and I've done conservation subdivisions since about the year 2000 on my own without any requirement to do so. And I will tell you that the first time that the property resells into the next hands, the buy-in to that system goes down, and it continues to go down. People do, they like to mow everything, and they don't, anything that's taller than 4 inches is weeds. It doesn't matter that it's a nice looking prairie or whatnot. But you get transitions as you get ownership, and the bulk of these people that are going to come out here have no reason to understand why that system is there and what it does. So I tend to do things that are larger and intended to serve numerous people and use usually that as part of the green space. So I kind of like this to kind of shift away from this issues in VMPs to kind of saying not all VMPs are created equal and give a little more effort to new ones that are going to be long lasting. Right? I don't disagree with a lot of these things. Don't misunderstand. I'm not, really all you do is make more work for me, which means I get more paid more. So I'm trying to cut my own throat here. But, I do believe in this these things. I mean, my degree is in ag engineering. It's not civil engineering. My degree was in soil and water. It's supposed to do these kinds of things. But we have to understand some reality as we move forward with these things. Okay? To that end, I think that's really the bulk of my comments. Is there any questions? Yes.
Does anybody have any questions? No? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other public comments?
Hello, Jim Sweeney with Platte Settle Harbor Associates. And I was kind of
with an address
process here.
Just your address for the record, please.
Oh, our office is in Ames.
Okay.
A lot of what the gentleman from Fox Engineering said, I tend to agree with in some of my experience as well, obviously not near as much as him. Regarding some of the things you brought up. Now the let's see here, I'll just go in the same order he did. So the redevelopment, I would probably agree with that sentiment. When you are redeveloping something, budgets get tight because it is expensive to do that, and what we've seen with our company is when we are redoing things, you run into some really tight spaces, and you run into having to use some really expensive, very just not great practices to achieve the minimums that you're kind of told to. As far as the minimum disturbed area, I was actually going to bring that up too. Let's see here. I was also going to echo the exemption of drainage districts from this for the same reasons that he brought up. You do run into some legal issues there. and that's a whole set of laws that you're really entangle yourselves in that you really don't want to when you're a supervisor having to go through this process. And I'm personally from Hardin County, and I do a lot of Hardin County and Franklin County's drainage district work. And just knowing what that all entails, you do want to exempt them because you're opening up a can of worms that you don't necessarily want your supervisors to have to deal with. You mentioned the infiltration rates. I actually have a real-world example where that is making somebody's septic system fail right now that we're having to deal with because he tried to make a pond, and unfortunately, that's also in the drainage district, and he wasn't supposed to do it, and it's just a mess. Now, some of my thoughts as I went through this, the stabilization of the disturbed areas, I'm referring to the erosion and sediment control, states all areas including stockpiles shall have temporary erosion control stabilization BMPs within 14 days after the area is no longer actively being worked.
Okay, where is that on this?
Oh, I'm sorry. That is page 3 of your site erosion and sediment control. Right at the bottom.
Okay, tell me that again because I'm flipping pages here.
Bottom of page 3 of the construction site erosion and sediment control.
Okay.
I would refer to general permit number 2, where this is a little bit different than what they specify in that. I think they say you're supposed to kind of get it in right away if it's not anticipated to happen for 14 days. So some unification there between the two.
Yeah.
Maybe nice.
It states stabilization of disturbed areas must, at a minimum, be initiated immediately. Whenever earth disturbing activities have permanently ceased and will not resume for a period of exceeding 14 calendar days.
Yeah. And then the top of page 4 there, within 14 days of achieving crown grade, final stabilization shall occur. I'm really recommending you strike that totally because you may not be done with your work after you've gotten all of your grading done. That's just not really practical. It's a hindrance to just the quality of the soil as you try to come back later. You know, you may be working for the rest of the summer on that after you've done final grading, and just really doesn't need to.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, hit me.
Thanks. So the second part of that is that you can use temporary stabilization. Is that if you can't do final within that time frame?
You know, that's
no.
I'm distracted. You're kind of it's just getting too much into it. I think that's just my.
So what would then happen is that you could achieve final grade, not have any erosion control, and have it sit there for 6 months while the rest of the construction happens around it?
So that's addressed, I believe, in the rest of it, that you have to establish that stuff, or in that first part is what I talked about changing to kind of match general permit number 2. So that's part 1 would cover that, as I understand it. You have my email address, we'll talk over it. Page 5. Disturbed slope lengths shall be broken up into several smaller slopes by installing silt fence, so on and so forth. That's pretty vague. Perhaps you want to specify a slope. I know Blackhawk County does like a 3-to-1 slope. You know, slope lengths is pretty open. And you would want to specify frequency in there. Part 4, subsection A of that same page, stabilized entrance, you might just refer to SUDAS there.
When, what the heck is that?
That's the state urban design, I can't remember the full acronym.
Statewide urban design and specifications.
Yeah, so we kind of refer to that the rest of the way. I think that's a good spot to just defer to them. Page 6, number 2 there. An inspection for compliance with submitted erosion and sediment control plans and requirements of this chapter shall be conducted by planning and development. I would say change shall into may, because you never know when you guys might be overwhelmed or that.
When would that happen?
I would say that gives you guys some breathing room. You don't really want to box yourselves in to a situation where you may not be able to handle some stuff. Okay, on to the other attachment that she gave you guys. The stormwater management. Page number 2. The very top, kind of back to that unintended consequences theme, that letter A there, the use of conveyance facilities open to atmosphere.
We got rid of that, sorry.
Oh, okay, great. bottom of the page, number 3 there, of page 2. Let's see here. So the sufficient engineering analysis to show the proposed, so on and so forth. You know, we're putting our stamp on this as engineers. I think us providing that for every single thing is going to be excessive for you guys, excessive paperwork, excessive cost to the customer. We're already putting our stamp on it, saying it's going to be good. And then if it's not good, then that can come back on us already. So needing to provide that to the county just doesn't seem necessary, especially when you're talking, you could get down to the level of, well, calculating how much mulch per acre because of this much rain, you know, it's kind of getting in the weeds. I don't know that you guys want to deal with it. I know we don't really need to spend the money or time submitting that to you guys, you know, unless we really see a problem.
Could this be notes on the plan?
As far as like our calculation, or
well, the best management practices that are being used.
I mean, they're part of the design anyways, and we're going to put them in there per your requirements that you're already talking about, and by me stamping it. With my profession, you know, being a professional engineer or Fox or whoever, we're saying it's good, we're putting our name on it, and if something comes through to where it's not good, you know, that's going to fall on us anyways. And I don't think we need to bog you guys down in the real nitty-gritty details. It just becomes expensive and time-consuming for everyone. Page 3 there. D sub 2, the end of the first sentence, again, I would just say may there. Don't box yourselves, guys. You get yourselves in there.
And which one are you talking about?
Page 3.
Yeah, I'm on page 3, but
section
I
section D.
Okay.
Subsection 2.
Thank you.
The end of the first line. Just, again, something to not really box yourselves in. Lastly, on your definitions, I would just add site. You do have development, you do have construction site. I think site is something else you want to, because that site, quote unquote, may not be just a disturbed construction site or whatever. You know, you may have something else on the property, and that isn't part of that development or construction that, you know, that would be entailed by site. So just to avoid confusion for the engineer or the construction manager or whoever. Mm-hmm. So, any questions for me?
Does anyone have any questions? No questions, thank you.
Great, thanks guys.
One little follow-up thing I wanted to, and I mentioned this last time, is you have the developer and you have the home builder. You guys have a lot of leverage on the developer, but from my standpoint is, you know, 80% of my problems are coming from the home builders not doing what they're supposed to do. And as an engineer for the development, I have given a lot of latitude by my clients to do things. I have no leverage over those guys whatsoever. So when you're doing enforcement, it needs to be specific to that home builder, not to the developer, because you won't do anything about it, and I can't do anything about it. So just wanted to make that clear as well. Because honestly, about, again, 80% of the problems that I have on sites are due to a home builder doing something, not anything that my contractors have done or that I've designed. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comments? Okay, now's the time for commission discussion.
I think it'd be worth a while if staff had an opportunity to address some of the concerns.
Absolutely.
Sure. So thanks very much for your comments. They're helpful. I think I'll start with the exception for the county engineer. It is just an exception that he doesn't have to submit an application and plans. They still have to comply with the requirements. We didn't want them to have to go through another process with another county department of submitting actual plans and applications when they're doing grading or just like ditch maintenance. So that's the goal there, not to exempt them from requirements.
A lot of their projects are going to be larger than an acre, and so four of them working with their contractors are going to be required to obtain the state permission.
Mm-hmm. Also. So I do think we'll be hearing if there are issues from Darren. But typically they would have to require with the state requirements anyway.
Okay.
Regarding on erosion control, the buffers, so we have a definition, and I think the concern there again was that it will not allow someone to make necessary improvements to a buffer area. So our definition of buffer is an area of land or vegetative area of desirable trees, shrubs, plants that exist or is established to separate different land uses or mitigate a risk associated with a land use or structure. In the ordinance itself, again, we added a clarification that an undisturbed buffer zone shall be provided in accordance with the following minimum buffer sizes measured from the edge of a water course or a feature. These buffer zones are encouraged to be revegetated. So we hope that that addresses that issue.
Revegetated, but there are some times it needs more than that.
Yeah. And
well, and two of these areas are in like a floodplain. They would have to apply for a floodplain permit and meet county requirements. They may need to meet state requirements or, you know, other levels of standards. Mm-hmm. In addition.
So those were our changes to the buffer, though, based on those comments previously. Regarding the, you know, you have a, with the threshold for submitting an erosion control plan, folks under 1 acre, we did not establish a minimum. And this is something that we talked a lot about with other county departments because it was a concern. You know, we have, for instance, a minimum size of 100 square feet. Over that, you have to submit a zoning permit. But we didn't establish any sort of minimum with this ordinance because we do have issues. You know, we get a call 2 months ago where, because it's so close to a property line, even though it's just a garden shed, they've built up the shed on a big pad, and then they didn't stabilize the size. They didn't stabilize the pad they'd built up yet, and so the neighbor is getting a bunch of sedimentation onto their property. So we didn't want to establish a minimum size because there are so many factors that can make a site susceptible or a development susceptible. You know, that same shed in the middle of a property where there wasn't a slope might not be an issue. And so what we did do, though, was just have the general requirements that apply to everyone. So that, again, would be minimizing a disturbed area and stabilizing disturbed areas. And then we add it when there are sensitive features, when your site or your development is more susceptible because you're right by a property line and there's a slope or upslope from a water course. That's when we get into perimeter controls, buffer zones, that kind of thing. Let's see. On infiltration of stormwater, we did previously require that, and we took out that requirement to allow folks to do things such as wet ponds. I think we would be open to adding, before we go to Board of Supervisors, if that's what the commission directs us to do tonight, adding in a statement that where infiltration is not possible, 80% of total suspended solids shall be removed from a site. So you could do some other practices to deal with actual runoff of pollutants from a site.
Right, so I'm curious, I'm just asking, your comments, and I'm sorry, I forgot your...
Scott,
your comments about the infiltration rates, you were guarding against recommending that, right? So I think the direction that you're going, is that this, you guys are on the same page, or more or less?
Or based on the site? Because we're talking about designers coming up with the best practice or method to deal
right,
with.
I just want to make sure you're addressing, do we want to add it back in? And I think he specifically was saying don't add it.
Right.
Well, some of my conversation, because it's very late in the game, is I'm telling Jared what he's going to have issues with me on if you go forward with this. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. The problem you're going to get into is that wet ponds are not really encouraged as a pollution treatment device. Right? So a wet pond and meeting 8% solids, I'm not certain I can always do that. I'll have things I can do to make that happen, but really, it's kind of odd. It would seem like a pond is always a good thing, but from a water treatment standpoint, it really doesn't count for much. Right? They really want you to try to infiltrate it. But again, it's how... You know, we still want to apply some common sense rationale to these at some point and say, this isn't going to work here. Let's not try to do that.
Mm-hmm. So this is what I would suggest we could add in. It's from a previous version. It says, when infiltration of the water quality volume is infeasible due to natural or existing physical characteristics of a site, lists some examples. One includes distance to septic systems and wells. Issues with soil infiltration rates, where hot spots or contaminant soil makes infiltration-oriented BMPs hazardous. The recharge volume shall be achieved to the maximum extent practicable, and the site shall be designed to remove 80% of total suspended solids. That's something we could add back in.
Is that more in line with what you were thinking, Scott, or...
Yeah, that's a more standard statement than what is in there now. But probably the other thing I would say is since you don't
you don't have limitations on...
go ahead and step the microphone. Thank you.
Since you don't have... The problem is always going to be the septic systems. And so that's got to be one piece of criteria. I mean, I don't mind doing it if I'm not going to trash out a septic system, but I think I told you this the last time. We're having like 20% failure rate on septic systems. Part of that is just really wet weather. Part of that is urban owners buying a lot in county, not doing what a septic system can do.
Yeah.
You can't do what you can't do. What you can't do. Correct. So, we're just trying to prevent some of those things, but I'm, this last 12-month period, I think, is the wettest in recorded history for Iowa, and I'm getting a lot of calls for septic systems that have failed. They're probably doing one a week, maybe. So. Mm-hmm.
I think one thing we could do would be to take out the distances from septic systems and just have it when a designer feels that it could be an issue due to these factors. Great. So we can make that change. The overbank flooding criteria, I think we've discussed this one before. So the, we put in, I'll go back to it. Sorry, I've got all these documents up. Okay. So what we attempted to do was create an exception for if a designer felt, based on a downstream hydrological assessment, there would be a flooding issue, that it would increase the rate, they could be accepted from, where is it? Accepted from that requirement. So it's the third bullet point. Waiver of overbank and extreme flooding criteria. You know, we're trying to strike a balance here. There was a 5-acre area disturbed threshold previous for requiring overbank and extreme flooding criteria. We actually discussed it with the city of Ames, and they were concerned, on the other hand, of having such a high threshold that could create more downstream flooding. So we lowered the threshold. We still have an exemption. We're trying to strike a balance. Is this?
This is something where Ames is clearly not doing what's in their best interest. This is a phenomenon of places that have done really controlled detention that you can make flooding worse. And so there is this general rule, and I'm not certain they're aware of it. If they would consult with HDR, who did their stormwater study, they would tell them the same thing, because I have faith and confidence at listening to their presentations that they would say, well, that's not always a great idea for some locations. And it just goes to it. Again, I think it's a hokey piece of math that they use for that. I don't like it. I'm an old enough guy, so I wrote my own software to read. Stuff, and so I know how the calculations work and what's happening. And to me, that piece of math doesn't really do anything, and it just kind of aggravates me that it's there. But it also goes back to the way that this is set up. Right now, they have detention requirements for each storm level, right? You do a 2, a 5, a 10, a 25, a 50, and a 100. Well, one way to get away from that is to pick a lower level storm and say that you're going to have a discharge rate, say, of a 5 or a 10-year rate, and you're going to hold the rest. That's a way to do the same thing, but you still run into the same problem. But I think it's just simpler to design that way.
Okay. I think I have an example I could show.
Yeah, can you go to the table that lists that? I might like to simplify that a little bit. There's a little bit of here's the other thing is we're generally not designing these things to the precise end of things. We're usually way overboard, all right? So, a lot of these that I'm building are at least 50% bigger than they need to be to 100% bigger, because we don't try to do that much in precise calculation. And then if you get large enough, and this is where the number of acres comes into play, is if you get large enough, and we're doing a pond, as a 10-acre drainage area and has certain criteria, we're into another level of design effort that's by state law, not according to anything that you're going to require us to do. And so you can ask for all that you want there, but at the end of the day, I follow state law, and the county can ask for whatever they want. So is that the one?
This is an example of where, with the overbank criteria and the extreme flooding criteria, you can limit the post-development rate during the 5-year through 100-year to the lesser of runoff rates equivalent to those from a storm event of the same intensity and duration based on pre-development conditions. So that's what's in the current ordinance, or runoff rates equivalent to those from the 5-year storm based on conditions which exist as of the date of the proposed improvement plans.
And so given the choice, I can tell you we're always going to do this, just because, okay, I don't believe the overbank thing is the right thing to do. Indeed, that's one set of calculations. The other one is actually 6 sets of calculations plus an overbank, so there's 7 sets of calculations for that. And then the controls for discharge are a lot more complicated. I like to keep things simple that work every time versus having something that's complicated that doesn't work very well. That's my major problem with the infiltration practices, is we're infiltrating such a small number. I mean, you know, for a couple acre site, I have, you know, holes in a plate that govern flow that are less than my finger, all right? A piece of styrofoam can get in there and block that in 2 seconds, it won't work. It's 100% failure rate almost all the time. And I can't keep them clean, so.
Yeah, I think we'd be willing to make that change and we could do it before Board of Supervisors if that's your recommendation tonight. We've got a draft with that in it, so.
I would echo that sentiment, too. I mean, we're getting so darn in the weeds for such a small amount of area to where I don't know if it's necessary to get this specific, just into it. I mean, you're talking some very, very specific numbers for really small area that just, you know, it's a little too much.
Yeah. Okay. Best management practice failure is the next topic, I think. So we added that for erosion and sediment control, specifically, the party responsible for maintenance and their contact information, if different from the property owner or permit applicant, is required to be submitted. So we know who's responsible, and somebody has to be designated. So that would likely be the home builder, the person putting the practices in place, if they're hiring a contractor to do that. Otherwise, there are some groups or some businesses like specialize in like erosion control installation. It could be the property owner themselves, I suppose. So for stormwater, let's see. We do have a provision for they have to provide the maintenance procedures required and the party responsible for the maintenance, again. So clearly designating the party responsible for ongoing maintenance. So if there was a violation, it specifically says if a responsible party fails. So again, it's the responsible party who's designated, whether that's the homeowners association or the property owner who has the practice on their lot. And hopefully, you know, these plans will be shared with property owners and they will understand them and keep them in functioning order, which is required.
Otherwise, they're responsible and it can come back to them anyway, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think you may run into problems with that information getting transmitted.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a bunch of homeowners associations. My wife just got elected to her owner's association because they have so many problems. They can't even figure out what bylaws were passed when, and now they're running into trouble before. You know, yeah. It's tough.
Yeah.
Can the staff have the opportunity to go through these without back and forth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess my question is today the discussion is exactly that discussion. You were looking for a motion to move this to Board of Supervisors, right?
Yeah.
I'm wondering, there's a pretty broad swath of some revisions or changes. I think you've listed four or six that
for the, you know, infiltration and overbank, since we have examples already up, we've already published in newspapers, which costs our department a lot of money for Board of Supervisors in case the recommendation went forward. And so if at all possible, based on seeing these examples of what we'll change it to tonight, you could still make a recommendation to move it forward, that would be great.
And then you will take that with these adjustments that you all just
will agree and work with.
Yeah, Jim and Scott.
We greatly appreciate their input.
Absolutely.
Jim was part of the group.
Who
that had Scott involved.
I was here for the
Jim was.
Yeah. And so with that, you know, we'd taken also Jim's recommendations of like adding a definition of site and you know, making more references to C to make sure we're matching NPDES language, state requirement language, specifying a slope for when you're disturbing slope lengths and have to put in fences or slope silt fences to break those up, making sure we are referencing SUDAS for construction entrances. And we can discuss more a timeline for when you have to achieve final grade. I think as staff, we'd be uncomfortable not having a timeline established because we do currently have issues where folks all the time call for final inspections and we go out there and their lot is still completely unseated and they would like their final permit. And we don't have any enforcement mechanism except that you have to be completely done with your project within 18 months. And it is a bigger issue for erosion in the county.
And then there were a couple of places in section D number 2 with the may instead of shall for the chapter.
We'd like to keep shall. We realize that that's a commitment. I'm going to inspector training tomorrow for stormwater practices all day.
Every day or week.
Okay.
This will be part of the land development regulations and it falls under our department. Mm-hmm. So this is just part of.
And the goal would be, you know, we already go to these sites for inspections and some of these could be incorporated, especially for erosion control, with the preliminary inspection that we do before someone pours their foundation.
Gotcha.
And our approach, trust me, is not, we're not, if we have an issue, we don't, by practice, we don't go to enforcement right away. We always try to work with the property owners. That's just the way it's been since I started in the middle of 2015, and we would definitely continue that as an approach. Okay. Although we have that ability to use the enforcement mechanism.
And we've seen that practice with the home business type thing. We've seen that in action.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The only other suggestion was the exception for redevelopment. And I think we have an exception for maintenance that we discussed already. An exception for redevelopment of a site.
That I think we need more input on because I'm not really fully sure.
I'm not sure I agree with the. I think the only thing that I would want to say is if a site is being redeveloped, to use that word, for the same purpose, then maybe an exemption. That was my question before, though, right, about a partial change versus complete change, or you know, again, using the parking lot example of you have a parking lot that you're tearing out to redo, right? Do we at that point say you need to meet the new requirements, understanding that it's going to add cost, it's going to actually reduce the usable space, etc.? That's my question, and I'm not making a decision one way or the other, but should that be something that we exempt? Or should we, so redoing something with the same usage, do we exempt that? But on the other hand, if you're calling it redeveloping an existing already disturbed site
within the same footprint,
and you're turning a parking lot into a housing development, you're redoing it for a different purpose, and I would fully say don't exempt that. Right, because it's already disturbed and it didn't meet previous requirements. If it's going to be a different usage, then I would say then it needs to comply.
Well, then you have to, I'm thinking that what if there's some issues that the site is causing with the current status and use, and then with the redevelopment, how will things be made better? Maybe it'll still be the same.
Right.
So I think that is
anyone?
I need more examples.
You need more examples. I
can see here what's cost.
1 acre is the threshold again, that we're larger than an acre.
Oh, for stormwater.
Yeah, again, you know, it's a smaller area to where I don't know if it's as big of a concern. You know, if you're talking, you know, 3-5 acres, yeah, sure, I'm right on board with you, man. I just think with the size of area we're talking about, it's not as big of a concern in my mind.
Am I hearing that you're going to apply the 1 acre to the redevelopment site?
Can we get some for the...
If it would be like part of a common development plan where you're adding like an acre, but if it's within the same footprint currently is how it's set up. I think.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
I'm going to take this back to commission discussion. Before we move forward with commission discussion, did we finish? So we finished what was your recommendation at the end? What were you? Did you have a recommendation or a request from the commission?
Yes, this is the recommendation. I would amend it.
Okay.
To say in.
All right.
If we put in the changes discussed this evening.
Okay. Can you list what those changes are?
Sure.
Can you identify? For the record, explicitly,
yes.
What those changes are.
Okay. We will be matching the Iowa Stormwater Education Partnership.
Can you cite
yes.
Section and like
okay.
where you're at?
Yep.
What you're proposing to change versus what is on the table.
Okay. I'll start with definitions.
Okay.
We will be adding a definition of site that is property as a whole, which is different from construction site, which is the disturbed area.
Okay.
An erosion control, so it's 88.05, subparent 4, subparent C, page 3. Under stabilized disturbed areas, it currently says within 14 days We will match the language in the NPDES permit, which states stabilization of disturbed areas must, at minimum, be initiated immediately whenever clearing, grading, excavating, or other earth-disturbing activities have permanently ceased on any portion of the site, or temporarily ceased on any portion of the site and will not resume for a period exceeding 14 calendar days. In drought-stricken areas.
Can we just cite that provision?
I think that's great, because then if that provision gets changed at the state level,
it'll
then
still
you,
match.
Then you guys are still right along with it.
So, and
future-proofing.
So
to clarify.
Reference state.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll just reference NPDES permit requirements for soil stabilization. To clarify, and you believe that that requires folks to initiate final site stabilization immediately whenever clearing, grading, and excavating is completed?
No, that's temporary.
Temporary.
Yes.
Okay.
And
so that'll be the next thing we'll talk about then.
Yeah.
Are we still having back and forth here, or can we just go through?
Yeah
we're going.
I'd really like some, just so I can.
Yes. The next suggested change was regarding the paragraph right after the one we just discussed, but we're on the next page, so page 4. It currently states that within 14 days of achieving final grade, final stabilization shall occur through erosion control, final stabilization, best management practices. Here, it was suggested to scrap the whole thing. I don't think staff would be willing to do that.
Can you say where that is again?
It's
page 4.
Page 4. It's the
number
little
first
okay.
2. I think we would be willing to include an alternative that if a designer would like to propose final site stabilization, such as native landscaping, that does not fit within the definition of final site stabilization, that may take longer to establish, they may submit a plan for approval to do that. We could add that in there. So that's what Scott was talking about with Prairie. Just allowing the designer some leeway in final site stabilization for native vegetation, native revegetation. The next page would be page 5. It's D, disturbed slope lengths of a 3-to-1 ratio or greater. Shall be broken up into several smaller slopes by installing silt fences.
And the point here was we should specify
a specifying a slope. It's a
3-to-1. The 3-to-1 slope, definitely. As far as frequency along that slope.
Are we going to just, I mean, I hate to.
I don't like this. Yeah, I'm checking with the commenters before we change the language.
They've had their opportunity to speak, and I think we need to just hear from staff at this point.
Okay. That was my fault.
We could do 3-to-1, or we could do a percent, such as 9%. I think that's the cutoff for a lot of soil designations that have a high to moderate slope. It's 3-to-1.
Is there a standard definition or a standard reference value for?
We don't have a definition of slope.
You could add a definition.
I don't need you to add a definition. I'm just wondering if it needs a value, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was.
That's what's missing.
That's what was suggested.
Right. Well, you do reference disturbed slope lengths shall be broken up. So is that 6 inches? Is that 6 feet? Is that 100 feet?
Mm-hmm.
And then how? What frequency? Right? How often over a given period?
we could reference, make sure we have a reference to SUDIS in there for installation of silt fences.
So I have a concern.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is that we're drafting the ordinance as we speak, because we need to make a recommendation. And that doesn't make sense for us to be involved in drafting. We're here to make a recommendation.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, in my view, to make a recommendation to move forward with something that's not complete. Mm-hmm. Right? Again, this is complicated because we're making changes to something that didn't exist or was limited previously, right? It's not something that we're not interested in.
And we're getting new comments, too. We've been working for 2 years on this.
I understand that, but we're also going to try and make it right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I get it.
I have no doubt that you will make it right, and I think that we are very close.
Yeah. I'd suggest that we could cut it. And we are going to be doing an overall review of our ordinances that we're working on right now and amending it at that point. This was one that the previously we required property owners to do flow diversion, and the county engineer suggested that that was too much for property owners because we're not requiring an engineer to undertake themselves. And so this was the compromise.
Again, we're just making a proposal to modify right now on the fly, and I think that there's a list. You have a list of things. Mm-hmm. There's references to SUDOS. The ones that I have, the notes that I have, are related to the overbank discussion, the BMPs discussion, whether we do BMPs or explicit definitions, drainage districts. Mentions. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that you're going to add and or remove or change.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm ready to entertain a motion.
I would like to make a motion to table this until we have the amended documents.
Okay, so we have a motion by Cable and a second by Mins to table this or to remand it back to staff for further revision. Is there any discussion on the motion? No? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Cable.
Aye.
Mins.
Aye.
McBride.
Aye.
Smith.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Okay. My comment on that is I don't want this to feel like a defeat because we have been running this marathon and getting this done. I would encourage you to take what we've talked about today and to just clean it up, because I think that the feedback that we've heard is that there's risk involved with implementing the version as originally presented today with some of the, there's issues or concerns with some of the items. And I don't think that this meeting is the right place to resolve those.
Staff would agree with you.
Okay, right. And I'm sorry I let it get out of hand and lots of discussion, but
We thought we were bringing an ordinance that was complete.
I agree. There was feedback, and we turned it into a discussion, and that was not appropriate. And that's my fault. So I apologize. So there's that motion then is passed to remand this back to staff, and I would like to see it again, and I do want to see these changes made. That's my only comment. Are there any, now is the time, that's the end of our business. Are there any staff comments?
Staff did send a letter to the DOT with regard to that
It's still there. I looked as I drove on my way out here.
You just sent it last week, and so I never received word back. And we're hoping to get word, and when we do, we'll communicate that to the commission.
All right.
Again, this was something that was not a part of the condition.
Right.
The proposed new one. So
again, that's
indicated
that's,
that they were intending to remove it.
That's a learning also for me.
Did I miss something?
The just to explain, on there's a DOT kind of like, I guess, a construction depot north of 30, west or east of 35. So east of the church, there's a DOT site just right there off the frontage road. And several years ago, they came to us wanting to add things or to re...
It was for the Iowa Interoperable Network that they were...
They needed to make some changes to the radio tower that they have at the front of their property. And they were going to rebuild it, I think, is what the request was. And it was going to be taller, significantly taller than the existing one, which then didn't meet setback requirements and things from the road. And so they ended up adding one. Linda's nodding her head. She remembers this. They ended up adding building a new tower at the rear of the property, but we did not specify that they, once they moved all of their things back to the new tower, that they take down the old tower. So now they have two towers on their property, one that's out of compliance with current requirements and then the new one. So I just have raised the question about, is there a plan for them to remove it? And as, again, a learning, we did not put a restriction on that, saying that when they built the new one, they had to tear the old one down within X period of time. So we're just inquiring to see what their plan is for those two towers. So thank you for that, Jerry.
Yep, and we'll communicate to the commission when we receive word. Some things that we're working on with the with regard to the work program, we were asked to do some analysis on all the subdivisions that have been approved by the county. Our intern, Gabe Nelson, has been working on that since he arrived in May, and we've got over 100 subdivisions. And part of what we're to figure out is, of all these subdivision roads, which ones were publicly dedicated for public use, and then also try to inventory what type of signage there is in place. We've had some requests to limit use and use certain subdivisions as a throughway to get to other locations. And so we are starting to do our...
You have to determine if it's actually a public road or not, right? Gotcha.
Right. So we're going to focus on the growth areas, Franklin Township, Nevada Township, Washington Township, and that's where most of the subdivisions are. So we'll hopefully have something that we can communicate to the Planning and Zoning Commission and get a recommendation going forward. So anything that's a work program, we try to communicate to the Planning and Zoning Commission and then go to the Board of Supervisors. Land evaluation, site assessment, we brought that to the Planning and Zoning Commission Board of Supervisors through the staff recommendation. We've decided not to tweak it. It's the system's not broke. It's an old system that's been in place for 30-some years, but it's a decent system. Most people in the county are familiar with it. It starts a dialogue with our department, which we like. They're property owners, people who are interested in properties, contact us by phone, in person. And so they're communicating with us what their plans are, and it's a great opportunity for us to relay what
talk
the requirements
about
are for the
talk
development.
About leases, of course, right.
We're in that process of trying to figure out what kind of information we need through the website, the form. We're going to analyze each of the questions that we review when we get a request. The most common request is they want to, you know, they've got a 20-acre site, there's a house, they want to divide it. They want to know if they can divide it to build another dwelling. But we're working on our transparency to get that information on the website. Debris management site, another thing that we've been working on for quite a while. We're to locate some sites in the county. There's actually a site in the county that we can go to process debris, whether it be tornado, flood, and We actually had two property owners who were interested last year to a degree. The lease that we have that was crafted really was set up to provide compensation to the landowner if we had a need to use the property. But right as we were getting ready to work on signatures, there were some adjustments made on the property owner's side. They weren't in support of the terms, but we didn't get a response back from them with regard to payment. So, but we have two new property owners who are interested. So we're going to be working on some language there with the current lease agreement to revise that. And then we have two cities who have expressed some interest. So again, this is something that we want to get to the Planning and Zoning Commission. This is like one component of what we're working on, but it's a very important component. And then U.S. Census Day is April 20. The Board of Supervisors appointed me as the liaison to be the representative for this complete count committee. And so the goal is to try to count all of the people in the county. And so through the previous census processes, they've identified who are considered to be hard to count or hard to reach, people who typically don't respond, 0 to 5-year-olds, young people 18 to 24, veterans. There's a list of people. And so the committee meet. Linda, Supervisor Merkin, participated. We had 8 to 9 city officials there, city clerks, city staff. It kind of went through what the goals of the census are. We had a lot of discussion about how to reach people. We are to get some materials from the U.S. Census so that we can distribute them to be used like at parades or festivals. And so we're going to also reach out with our community services department. We've got a meeting set up for the end of this month to get a dialogue going to find out ways maybe that we can reach hard to count people through their department and then other people and organizations that they now work with. So we're excited about that.
Excellent. Is there any staff comments or commission comments? No? I'd just like to apologize again for trying to work through that so that we could keep it moving forward, but I think it's apparent that that wasn't going to work, so I apologize for that. With no other business, do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Motion by McBride, second by Sherman. Adjourn.
And again, our goal would be to get this back to you for the August